Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this roundtable discussion, I'm joined by my sister Kay. We're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Ant-Man, the movie. We've just watched it on DVD, or Blu-ray, actually.
The 2015 movie. Is this the first time Ant-Man's had a movie?
It is not only the first time Ant-Man has had a movie, it is, I think, only the second time he's been portrayed in live action. And that's only if you count the Saturday Night Live sketches from the 70s. That I think Garrett, he had a cameo as the taxi driver. I'm forgetting the comedian's name.
You are already making me wish I was on Google.
You asked, but yes, this is the first time the character's shown up in live action. He's been in a number of cartoons over the years. Some of the Spider-Man ones, some of the Avenger ones,
Do you think part of that was the effects required to make the shrinking look good and that kind of thing? Or was it the character himself that didn't draw people to putting him in live action?
A little of both. I think predominantly for live action, it was the effects, which they pulled off beautifully here.
They did.
There were a few places I think they were a little overpronounced where they were going for the 3D effect. And we had the 3D Blu-ray, but we watched the 2D version. I just wasn't in the mood to get the glasses out, get those turned on, that kind of stuff.
Well, and to that end, I'll mention that it was interesting to me, like in the scene where he first shrank and was in the tub, there was floating dust motes and things of that nature. And I actually called out to you, I bet this is one of the scenes that's kind of for the 3D.
There were a couple, and that was one of them where I was thinking, okay, this would be worth rewatching in 3D.
Well, that was one where Bobby Yisp was the taxi driver, by the way.
No, that's not who I'm thinking.
Interesting.
Garrett something or other. And maybe he's just in, under a different credit then.
That could be. I just scrolled till I found the taxi driver.
At the end of that first sequence, when all that happens and he lands on the car, the guy in the car.
Yeah.
Because there was a series of Saturday Night Live sketches where they would just poke fun at Aquaman or a couple of, you know, lesser superheroes. And, you know, Ant-Man, he shrinks. He talks to ants. Easy one to make fun of.
And he's convinced you can hear him when he's itty-bitty and talks back to you.
The whole, yeah, difference of audio volume, because you can't really project very much when you're, you know, ant size. And that's something that they always kind of play with Adam, the Ant-Man, and other characters of that ilk.
I just wish they had done a little, the helmet makes it such that his voice is projected or something.
They've done that at times in the comics. The other effect they've done is they would take the word balloon, shrink it down, and shrink the font down.
That's funny.
So you could tell there was a sound, but not really make it out, which is a visual equivalent. But I think also the reason he hadn't had a movie before is he is, well, one of the founding Avengers in the comics. He's kind of a lesser run character.
Well, he's not the hero you think of in the classic sense of he's always been the good guy, always on the side of right.
Let's talk about the history of the character, though, in the comics. Because this movie features Dr. Hank Pym, who had been the first Ant-Man, who developed the Pym particle and all of that. That holds true to the comics.
Right, and I should mention, I have no comic background, so I only know the character from this movie. And so to me, there is some Hank Pym ancestry, if you will, to the character, but I really got this next guy as
Scott
Ant-Man.
Scott Lang as the Ant-Man. And it comes down to who is the character. Are we talking the character of Hank Pym, Ant-Man, Scott Lang, etc.?
Yeah.
Because in the comics, Ant-Man later became, and I'm probably going to get the order of this wrong, Giant Man, because if you could shrink, okay, take it the other way and grow. Goliath, he would just stay big for the most part. Then Yellow Jacket. And at this point, he started to go a little bonkers. And they addressed this, you know, hey, it'll affect your stability or whatever. And then stopped being a hero for a while. Went as kind of the scientific adventurer, Dr. Pym. And then kind of rotated back through a lot of these other identities. Since he had been those personas. Scott Lang, very similar background here, had been a thief, gotten arrested, yada yada, but a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, he had stolen the Ant-Man suit and stuff. And then Hank Pym realized, hey, you're doing some good with it. Keep it with my blessing. Okay, so he became the second Ant-Man. There has since been a third Ant-Man that has kind of come and gone, and we're now back to Scott Lang as being the Ant-Man in the comics. You've also got Hawkeye having taken over the Goliath identity at one point.
Hmm.
Bill Foster having taken over Giant Man, and I think somebody else after that did. You've also got one or two villains that have taken over a few of the identities. Wasp is one of the other identities he later takes, Hank Pym, in honor of Janet, who had died.
Okay.
Okay. But after he'd been Yellowjacket, somebody else took over that. He took over the Wasp. I mean, you could diagram out who's who, and it's a pretty involved diagram.
Yeah, I'm getting that.
So the fact that there's that kind of history to the character,
mm-hmm.
it's not like he is Bruce Wayne, Batman, Tony Stark, Iron Man, and that's just the way it is for the most part. And granted, you know, Rhodey took over as Iron Man for a while, and you've had, you know, subs here and there for a lot of the characters, but you always would default back to that.
Mm-hmm.
With Hank Pym, it's not like he's always been Ant-Man, and Ant-Man has always been him.
Yeah. Well, and to that end, you know, 10 years from now, if they decide, I guess it was Paul Rudd who mm-hmm. was playing Ant-Man here, you know, he's too old for the character or whatever, they can simply do a prequel to this movie that was set back in about 1985 and do a Hank Pym Ant-Man story.
Or they could do the one after him, whose name is eluding me at the moment. He was the irredeemable Ant-Man. There was a scene in the first Avengers movie where they're on the helicarrier and Iron Man's like, hey, I think that game guy is playing video games. And he was.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of guy the irredeemable Ant-Man was.
How funny.
He was just a complete goofball kind of a guy working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and essentially stole the armor or the suit.
Mm-hmm.
And he would use it to be a peeping Tom, do all kinds of just not on the up and up type stuff, but heroic when needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of despite his nature. So there were aspects of this that definitely played true to a lot of that. Scott having a broken marriage, very much from the comics. Having a daughter, very much from the comics. Normally in the comics, she's a bit older.
Okay.
Teenage, you know, young teenage, junior high school age.
I think the age they played it at here played well for the story they wrote.
Yes, absolutely. I think it was a smart move to do it the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
The girl who played Cassie did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, Cassie becomes Stature, a shape or size changing member of the Young Avengers.
Yeah.
At one point, Scott dies, comes back. At one point, Cassie dies, comes back. So there's the whole, you know, in the comics, it's convoluted. Here, they took the essence of the character, the essence of the history, and kept in mind what had happened in the rest of the cinematic universe,
mm-hmm.
and said, we're going to go this way, and stayed as true as they could.
Well, they brought in Agent Carter in mm-hmm. a nice, subtle way.
Howard Stark.
Yeah. I'm not really sure that the aging on Peggy Carter felt quite the way I thought the timeline goes.
Well, keep in mind, it was set back
1989.
Yeah, so 25 years.
Right, but I thought that the Agent Carter show was around 1948, 1950. So I thought the character was pushing 70, and I thought the makeup job was more like pushing 60.
I would agree with that, but there's also a matter of should she still even have been alive when Cap got thawed out.
True.
So given what they've done, you got to play a little fast and loose with some of that. I really don't think, I think they're banking on us not doing that math.
Yes, yes.
But I liked having them in there. I thought that was a nice cameo.
I really did too.
It was a good setup for a younger Hank Pym.
Yes.
How he plays into the whole S.H.I.E.L.D., what would become the Avengers stuff. We see the building of the Triskelion.
Well, and it really established his character and his character's morals quickly
mm-hmm.
by putting him up against Stark. Because we know so much about Stark. And yeah. we know he's a weapons manufacturer, et cetera, et cetera. So the moment we see these two going head to head and having conflicting opinions.
Well, it was more him going head to head with the other guy.
True, true.
But having Howard there on the one extreme almost, or the one aspect, having Peggy there gave us kind of a grounding. Doing it inside of a S.H.I.E.L.D. office, a visible, this, mm-hmm. we know this from the Cap movies and such, and the Avenger movies. It very much grounded this inside the cinematic universe.
Well, and Howard saying you can't quit. You can't yeah. leave. You know, you're still going to do what you can do. But Howard seemed to be agreeing with him to a degree on the, you can bury your research. I'm not going to fight you on that.
Stick around. We won't use that, but don't leave us. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was also fun to have the Falcon.
I loved it.
Cameo here. I don't know that I knew he was in the movie, or if I did, I'd totally forgotten.
I didn't know, and I thought that might have been one of the best fight sequences.
I thought it was a great fight sequence. I thought it was really good character moments.
Mm-hmm.
It harkened back to the Scott Lang Ant-Man having fought Avengers at various points until he got kind of accepted or whatever. It also was fun where it's like, well, you've got to go to this one, you know, storage facility or whatever out in the middle of nowhere. And as he's, you know, kind of coming in from the aerial aspect on the flying ants and stuff, realizing, wait, it's the new Avengers headquarters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of a, this isn't going to go well. Again, some great visuals. It was a really good cameo for, and not just a he shows up, but an extended sequence.
Yeah, it was great use of the character. And again, it was a moment where you got to see how far has this guy come in becoming Ant-Man. And it was one of those, I almost want to call it a maturing moment, where he went from being that kid wearing the suit to, okay, he may have potential to do the job.
This was the first time he was really out in the field, in action, with a serious, you know, opposition against him.
Well, and he managed to accomplish his goal.
Mm-hmm.
When the other two were saying, abort, abort, we think it's become impossible, give up.
Well, and when he had not only Falcon, but the rest of the Avengers support stuff against him.
Yeah.
So it was, it gave him the credibility as a thief, as did the initial break-in into Pym's vault and such.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another character that was in this of Darren Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Major factor right now in the comics, or these days, I should say, with the current Scott Lang series. I mean, they've had a number of successive short volumes for this Ant-Man.
Okay.
And one of the recurring aspects of them is Darren Cross, who at one point had kidnapped Cassie because I forget if it was Darren Cross, his son, or his father. There's two Crosses involved. Trying to save the father of the two by who needs essentially a heart that can survive some size shifting.
Mm.
Well, Cassie's got one of those. Let's just steal that.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of ludicrousness in terms of
yeah
of that. But having a character like that from the comics, it's a known factor for the character, using him very well, in this case as a protege of Hank Pym, and just a little bit of a fallen off the rails protege.
Well, and several of the scenes with him towards the beginning of the film, the director did a great job of capturing reactions from Hank Pym, from his daughter Hope, that really just established, like when Darren Cross is standing in front of the
we get the exterior shot going into the scene of the big Pym Laboratories building with the big Pym logo.
Mm-hmm.
We get in there, like you said, we see the diorama of it.
Yeah.
And it says Cross Industries or something.
Yeah, and we just get those reaction shots, and you can see, okay, Hank Pym is not terribly happy, but at this point, he's not out and out upset, shocked, angry.
It's like, I should have seen this coming.
Yes, yes. And then as the scene is progressing, and Cross is going off the rails, and he's realizing that he's trying to recreate the Pym particle. We're getting those reaction shots of, oh my God, the one secret I thought I truly buried is yeah. surfacing.
In the movie, Yellowjacket, though, gets a very different origin here.
Interesting.
Because Cross, like you said, he's going off the rails. He's trying to reinvent that Pym particle. he is created a very weaponized version of this legendary Ant-Man armor.
Mm-hmm.
Which, given what's going on with Iron Man and stuff, okay, fine. Technology exists. I'll take that. But in the comics, it was very much just a matter of Hank Pym, who had already not only invented the Ant-Man, Giant-Man, Goliath personas, but with Wasp, who he had basically created all the stuff for, it's like, here's how she can fly. Wouldn't it be cool if I could fly too?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, a yellow jacket, can, you know. And that was the start of him kind of going off the rails.
Interesting. Well, see, what got me was then as we went over into that other vault area and he unveils the, see, I've already made the yellow jacket armor. Now I just have to do a successful human shrinking and I'm done. That's when we get the reaction shot from Hope of, wait, he's further along than even I knew.
They knew they were, he was going down that road, but not how far he'd gotten.
Yeah. And actually, later in the film, when Cross reveals some stuff and Hope is shocked, I realize, well, I shouldn't be shocked because he'd proven earlier he could keep secrets from her.
Oh, yeah.
And she wasn't as deeply embedded as we thought.
Part of those sequences I really loved was when the one guy who was kind of, gee, is this technology we really want out in the war arena, and Cross basically uses him as a test subject.
Yeah.
And he's got this, like, tasery looking thing. And it's like, you know, kind of a, okay, he shrank and didn't work. Oh, well. That, it's like, man, that's cruel. But it's like, okay, you turn this into a handgun kind of a weapon, which was taken a step further, actually, by Pym, who had these little almost, you know, throwing star looking things.
I loved the throwing stars. I loved practice with the throwing stars.
Yes. I loved how they were used throughout the story.
Yeah, and I loved at the end of the film that it was a throwing star that seemed to save the day. That and Cassie.
Yeah. The throwing stars were kind of new. In other words, we hadn't seen that as a throwable weapon for Ant-Man or Hank Pym or any of those characters. But at the point Hank Pym was kind of the scientific adventurer with the West Coast Avengers, and was just essentially a guy, like a white lab coat kind of scientist looking guy out in the field. Actually, he alternated with that and almost a Doctor Who with the long scarf looking thing.
How funny.
Orange jumpsuit, the whole thing. He had a couple of different looks. But at that point, he was not shrinking and growing himself, but gadgets.
Mm.
So the whole bit with the tank,
I loved that.
Comes from that era.
And him making the things and shrinking them and then Ant-Man being in shrunken mode and putting them on the ants and sort of strapping them up for the mission.
Well, and that was near the end of the long kind of training montage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more than a montage. It's, well, you've got to do this. And we'd have bits and scenes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was, for that sort of thing, actually fairly long, but it was really fun.
Yeah, it was.
You know, there was a lot of scenes of him in the backyard learning about the different types of ants and at various points getting startled and then growing to full size. So he's like, you know, exploding out of the yard. It's like, well, that seemed scarier a minute ago.
Yeah. I was thinking they had the world's worst gopher hole problem.
Yes. But I would have loved to have seen some point, either as an end credit scene or whatever, like the gardener coming.
Yes, yes.
It's like, what happened to the yard?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because the first time I saw the ants moving around and doing lots of stuff, I thought, okay, am I really going to like an army of ants on the move in the film? And then the more they used them and the more coordinated the efforts became and the more both Hank and Ant-Man were talking to the ants, the more I grew to really like how they were doing that.
Well, and I think that's the other challenge with this character is not only getting the visual effects for the size shrinking, but getting the army of ants that he has.
By the time we were in the water pipe, the main water line valve on the raft of ants.
The raft of ants, them hoisting him up to the other area, them going the other way. I mean,
I loved it.
The use of the ants was clever. It was inventive. It was true to the comics.
I think one of the saddest moments for me in the whole film was when Anthony got shot.
I think it was Ant-Tony. But yes. And just seeing his one wing kind of floating down or whatever.
Yes.
It showed a difference between Hank and Scott.
Yeah.
You know, Scott Lang had named the ant, had gotten to know the ant, was treating them like friends and stuff like that. Again, rings true to the comics and stuff. Whereas Hank, a bit more of the scientist type, just numbered them.
Well, and like father, like daughter.
Yeah.
You saw Cassie sneaking food to the ant under the table like it was her pet dog.
Yes, I thought that was kind of funny. Although I was puzzled how nobody else had noticed.
I know.
There's this dog-sized ant that had grown. I mean, how do you have that large of a thing under the table? I mean, presumably the adults knew and were okay with it, but that whole kind of dining room scene was a good kind of end of the family life arc for the character of Scott.
That was the proof, in a way, that he'd gotten his second chance. He made the most of it, and he was on that path to redeeming his life, if not himself.
Yeah. He had shown, at least to the people that matter to him, that he was doing the right thing.
I think I would have been happier if the movie had ended right there with him taking the call and saying, I have to go work, and leaving, than with what came after it, because the final line of what came after it didn't play well for me. I liked most of it.
You know, it's funny because we get the guy who had picked him up out of jail, who had been kind of what had eventually introduced him to Hank Pym. And getting him telling the story of, yo, man, there's this girl who's got, you know, the 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
And the cutting of it, him doing the voiceover as they're mouthing the words. I loved that. I thought it was great.
Stan Lee lip syncing to him, basically.
Well, that was in the second one, but the first one set all that up. So having it echoed again worked. But you're right. It ended the thing on an odd note because it's like, okay, Falcon's looking for him. We know that, but we're not sure why. Is he trying to hunt him down? Is he trying to hire him? Is he?
Well, and the very last bit is, and I said yes, or they said yes. I'm telling you, I told him I'd spread the word to you because you were tight with him.
Mm-hmm.
So as you put, when I said, does this feel wrong to you? You said, well, where's Falcon? Shouldn't he have flown in about now?
Well, I wouldn't even have had him flown in. I'd have had basically him walk in at that point, and as his buddy's saying, I'm like, well, yeah, you know, Falcon's saying it too.
Yeah.
You know, kind of bring that full circle, and maybe even having Falcon hand out an Avengers card.
Yeah.
You know, that would have put it on one thing. If you had just ended with, hey, it's work, I would have assumed it was Pym.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I liked the mid-credit scene setting up the Wasp costume. Mm-hmm.
I think I would have been happier with it ending with a sensation of he's going to keep working with Pym. He's still on the right path.
Yes.
Versus this very ambiguous Falcon's looking for him and...
I agree. The ending is open to interpretation. If it had been he's working for Pym, that means implies he's got a steady paycheck coming in. He's on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't go that way. They left it with... Falcon's looking for him, so maybe he's still kind of sort of on the run, not sure what his status is with the Avengers. As far as we know, he doesn't really have a solid paycheck coming in.
Is he in Civil Wars? Is that what the next, I'm pretty sure it's
I think
the next
he's in
thing?
Captain America Civil War.
See?
Not positive, though.
If he is, then maybe that's what the Falcon looking for him bit was about.
Possible. I had taken it as just follow-up from him having ripped off the Avengers.
Yeah?
We'll get a sense of that in Captain America Civil War, then. Either way, I mean, the movie, by and large, was very fun, had some good moments. The costume looked good.
The movie was fantastic. I just wish I had left on that better note I was on 30 seconds earlier.
I would agree with that. I would say the weakest part of the film was that ending.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked the sense of style and what they were replicating from earlier. That in, I mean, the film with things like that had a very good sense of identity, of rhythm, of feeling. It almost felt like we were kind of watching a season of a TV show to a degree. Because a lot happened in this film, and it set up the kind of pattern, the things that would have been the formulaic, do it every week or every couple of weeks kind of a thing.
The first time I saw him changing size during a fight sequence, I wasn't sure I was going to like that. But the more he did it, the more I liked it.
I liked how they had set him up as a... cat burglar in a very fluid, kind of almost parkourish kind of a guy, because it sold that he had the physicality mm-hmm. and the moves to be doing what he had to do later.
Mm-hmm.
Him, it's like, okay, you know, go down the hallway, shrink, dive through the keyhole, regrow. It's just a matter of timing at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, what foot do I got to push off on? When do I hit the buttons? When do I shrink? Okay, whoops, not quite small enough at this point. Bounce off the door, try it again. You know, okay, my aim's a little off. Not crap, how do I get this coordinated and do this kind of gymnastics almost?
Yeah.
Which was also a nice kind of touch point with the daughter having done her cartwheel at the end.
Yes, yes.
You know, and kind of implying she's going to take after him a little bit.
Well, and his being a father played nicely into the scene where he got in the car next to Hope when she had kind of stormed out.
Yes.
And
the I'm here because I'm expendable.
Yeah. And I mean,
great line.
Yeah, I'd certainly picked up on that earlier.
Well, and it also drew some parallels between the characters in the movie that don't exist in the comics, because Hope doesn't exist.
Interesting.
Hank Pym doesn't have a daughter in the comics.
Hmm.
So that whole father-daughter dynamic that they're able to really use very well in this to establish a good relationship between all the characters,
mm-hmm.
they don't have that to draw on.
Interesting.
And that's one of the things that I think makes the Scott Lang Ant-Man very interesting and works well mm-hmm. in there. And is part of what has that and the ex-con trying to redeem himself been almost a hallmark of his history in the comics. That's kind of what helps, I don't say get him in or keep him in the Avengers, but make him interesting in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
That's what got him kind of in with the Fantastic Four in the comics, because he was at one point just kind of their tech guy. At one point, he was actually a member in one of the leader of the team when the main Fantastic Four was kind of out of pocket.
I loved his tinkering on the suit once yes. it was his. And then when Dr. Pym comes in, sees what he's doing, basically tells him why he shouldn't. And he's like I always said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
What was interesting, I took that as telegraphing, and I think I said so during the movie. That's how he's going to defeat Yellowjacket.
Mm.
Thinking he would sabotage that guy's regulator and he would just shrink to nothing. And it was almost the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had to shrink, and his knowledge of it is what allowed him to escape from the subatomic universe or whatever. Now, in the comics, the subatomic universe, you shrink down, you hit some kind of transition point, and it's almost like you're in another galaxy reality or whatever. There are planets, all this kind of stuff. The Hulk has spent a lot of time in some of these worlds, whatever. And one of the again, similarity with the Atom and stuff like that, they've done similar sorts of things in the DC comics. And at one point, the Atom was fighting, I guess, his ex-wife's new husband or some such, who had a size shrinking thing. And they're both shrinking down, and at one point, sitting on like an atom or something, you know, nucleus of an atom or something, you know, subatomic.
Mm-hmm.
And he, the other guy was like, well, why are you doing it? It's like, if I don't, I'll never find you again.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't hit, you know, hang loose with you here, you're doomed.
Yeah.
But okay, you're ready to talk. Let's, you know, do this kind of a deal. And it goes towards the original wasp in the movie, having gone subatomic or whatever. Presumably, even if you could find the missile she had defused at a subatomic scale, okay, you're in the right galaxy. Can you get to the right planet, much less the right region of the planet?
Well, the missile went underwater.
Mm-hmm.
So conceivably, she has enough air. I don't understand enough about how the suit works. The suit
seems to be self-contained. I took it as supplying its own, having its own air supply.
Okay. And what I loved in the movie when he went subatomic was Cassie just kept calling out for him.
I took it as that was the last thing he was hearing as he shrunk down, or shortly thereafter. He was still able to hear it.
Yeah, well, and part of it, though, was she was sitting on the edge of the bed, staring at where he'd been, and she seemed to just be calling out periodically to him as the fiancé of the ex-wife is staring over there going, what just happened? Because
mm-hmm.
clearly not much time had passed.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I thought that was a nice... nice touch, nice character moment.
Mm-hmm.
It worked well.
Yeah.
As did the, you know, Yellow Jacket thinks he's going to get run over by Tommy the Train or whatever yes. it is.
Yes.
And then it just hits him and kind of stops or whatever. That I'd seen in the trailers and whatnot.
Yeah.
But him kind of it getting thrown out the window and growing big or whatever was just hilarious.
Yes.
There's almost a little bit of a Power Rangers kind of vibe of make it grow.
Yes, yes.
But again, between the throwing stars, the use of the pin particle, the weaponized yellow jacket and stuff, it was a very fun film. It stayed true to the spirit of the comics, as much of the continuity as they could. And I say that because in addition to Hank's other identities and some stuff like that, there are certain parts of his, the Ant-Man history,
mm-hmm.
and I mean all the characters, Hank Pym, that they've already borrowed for other characters.
Mm.
In the comics, Hank Pym creates Ultron.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
So, well, you've done that with essentially Tony and,
mm-hmm.
and Banner and stuff, so I guess you can't do it here. Fine, don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a really good movie here, and just they got the shrinking down. They made the ants work. They really sold the, this is how he's, you know, communicating with them. And at first I had taken it to, well, I guess the actor just needs hearing aids these days.
I feared they put hearing aids on to emphasize aging with that, the whole he retired out.
That would have done it too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the, no, this is how I'm communicating with them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you want sugar in your coffee, and it's, I think I'm good. It's like the ants are pushing it over. It's like, that was funny.
Yeah.
But it also showed just how adept Hope was with all of that. Mm-hmm. When she was blocking out the light, when they were doing some stuff. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the use of the ants was clever. It was inventive. It was not just, here's this swarm of ants overrunning, you know, the place.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was very pleased with this. I thought they did a good job. I'm looking forward to a sequel on this.
Me too.
I want to see this character involved in the Avengers, in Captain America Civil War, in the cinematic universe.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see references in the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff.
You know, it's funny you say that, because on the one hand, totally agree. On the other hand, I was disappointed the buyer was Hydra.
I was disappointed by that too. One of those actors also looked very familiar from somewhere else. But I'm getting tired of Hydra. If the way I would make use of this in the S.H.I.E.L.D. show
mm-hmm.
is I would, if you could get Paul Rudd to guest star for an episode
mm.
with just my suits at the cleaners.
Yes, yes.
Or it's been stolen
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing. Something to where you use him just as a cat burglar.
Yes.
You know, I think there's some fun stuff they could do. The movie actors, by and large, into the TV show. They've done a time or two. It's got challenges. I get that. But, and we haven't seen any of the season of third season of S.H.I.E.L.D. yet.
True.
But Marvel, this was one that before it launched, this movie looked like, geez, is this going to work or not?
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. It had a sense of style, a sense of humor, a unique personality about it. And I credit mm-hmm. the director for that.
Yeah.
That's something that could have come off as a poor man's Iron Man with shrinking involved had a life of its own.
Well, I loved when he test drove the suit the first time, if you will, going through the party and the vacuum cleaner and stuff. I thought that was well done and a great sequence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there were just several points in the movie like that where it was just a fun ride.
I agree with that entirely, and I think the actors, by and large, pulled it off. The writing had the right material. There were a few things here and there that were fairly reminiscent of Iron Man.
Mm.
Specifically, Cross came across, pardon the pun there, a lot like Obadiah Stane, who became the Ironmonger in the big, huge Iron Man suit in Iron Man 2.
Mm.
The corporate rival who's got similar technology, and
mm-hmm.
there's an aspect of Wasp, or I mean, Wasp, Yellow Jacket makes a good villain for this piece, but there's a certain opposite number factor
mm-hmm.
that's a very easy go-to thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's easier to have two people shrinking and fighting against each other versus having somebody who's got like ice powers or something radically different or whatnot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's that, but It's interesting because, I mean, Marvel's taken a number of risks. There were a number of the films they did that before they came out, I'm like, geez, you know, this Thor thing, I love the character, but is he going to get accepted by the movie audience?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Captain America, it's a period piece thing. You know, I'm looking forward to it, but what about everybody else?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with Ant-Man, it looked shaky going in, but did really well. They seem to continue to be able to get the right directors on the right projects to pull it off.
Well, and it keeps coming back to the writing. They're getting a good balance of both story and sense of humor.
Well, and sense of identity.
Yes.
This is a very different film than the Iron Man films, than the Captain America films, than the Thor movies, than the Hulk stuff they'd done, than the Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, and I feel like they're maintaining identity of characters, if you will. Falcon was very much the character I recognize, personality-wise.
Yes.
From the Captain America films. So it was like seeing an old friend come to town for a visit when he was in that scene.
Mm-hmm. They've got the character. They understand what works about the characters from mm-hmm. the comics, what they can transition to the movies, what they need to tweak to transition to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
They take a few changes. I don't say liberties, but they make some changes, some smart, strategic ones. Maybe a few haven't worked, whatever, but by and large, they've all worked. And while each movie has its own tone, style, sense of direction or whatever, it's clearly a single universe that it can all play in.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're just growing this universe, which harkens back to the early days of the Marvel Universe, where it's like these characters are all sitting in the same reality, the same city.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have that
overlap.
I wasn't thinking overlap, but resonance, the sense of the different things adding to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And growing to something larger than the sum of the parts.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a lot of what is making the Marvel movies work. I also think it's a lot of what's making the DC TV shows work.
Yeah.
And Marvel's done such a great job branding their movies, their cinematic stuff, and getting it that whole identity that I'm hoping DC starts to follow suit and strengthen that part of the TV show stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at what they did here, and I don't recall any part of this film where I was thinking, you know, the effects here just didn't quite hold up. Now, there were a few where it's like, okay, they're a little pronounced because I think they're doing this 3D-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bathtub scene when he first shrinks, a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them were bad.
Agreed.
So, yeah. To me, terrific film.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.